Cynodon goes to the window and he gestures out to the agora, the marketplace outside, and he says, "How many of these are full Spartan citizens?" And the Spartan officials look and they count and they see there is a very small number out there. The rest are non-Spartans. And Cynodon says, "Everyone out there who is not a Spartan would be quite ready to eat the Spartans alive and raw." Now, whether the episode actually took place or not, I can't actually guarantee, of course, but what it reflects is the notion that Sparta, after the conquest of Messenia, became a closed society in which every focus of every Spartan institution was oriented towards the subjugation of that much larger Messenian population. So what we should do now is look in more detail at the organisation of Spartan society in the Archaic and the Classical period to try to determine what their institutions were and what was particular and peculiar about them. The Spartan constitution was normally regarded as a most shining example of what the Greeks called eunomia, which simply means good order. The Spartan state, in the eyes of conservatives throughout the Greek world, was a model of good order, a model of how society should, in fact, be organized. It was associated with a single founding figure named Lycurgus. And like many other Greek states, the Spartans assumed that their order had not developed over many, many years, but had been given to them by one almost semi-divine figure. This eunomia, this good order, was enshrined in a document called the Rhetra, which actually stipulated various orders as to the organization of Spartan society. The way that society was arranged was unique and particular, and it worked like this. The Spartans, unlike virtually every other part of Greece, had a dual kingship, two kings serving at any given time. Now, the historical explanation for this is probably that at some early stage in Spartan history, there had been two quite separate groups with their own king who had fused, and that some arrangement had been worked out whereby the two royal houses would continue in power. This feature always seemed to the Greeks to be something archaic, and the very fact that it looked so old, that it looked in some ways Homeric, gave it kudos in the eyes of conservative Greeks everywhere. The actual administration of most affairs on a day-to-day basis was not handled by the kings, one of whom was usually a war leader leading the Spartan army in the field. Day-to-day administration was in the hands of a team of five, known as the five ephors. They were supported by a council made up of 30 elders. The council included in it the two kings, so we really have 28 elders and then the two kings. And they serve for life and served as a kind of supreme court for the Spartan state. And then below that, there is an assembly made up of all the adult male citizens. Now, in many respects, this organization is not unlike that of other Greek states. There is the notion of popular participation of adult males in an assembly. There is the notion of a council which actually advises and helps organize the running of affairs. And as always, this will be in the hands of elders. And then there is a core group of administrators who run the state from day to day. All of that seems in many respects to be quite orthodox. But what it is based on is a much more exclusive definition of citizenship than applied in any other Greek state. And so I want to talk for a moment about the different orders, the different statuses of citizenship that existed in Sparta. Full citizenship, the ability to serve in the assembly and the ability to serve in the army as a full Spartan warrior, was actually restricted to a narrow elite, and they are technically known as the Spartiates. They are the cream of Spartan society. The rest of the people living in Sparta and its immediate environs, the region which is known as Laconia in southeastern Greece, were relegated to various lower statuses below that of the Spartiates.